This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
We're in the 13th year of a non-international armed conflict, and the insecurity that comes with a conflict that continues to prevent many people from farming or earning their own income.
That's UN Humanitarian Coordinator in Nigeria, Matthias Schmall, on the growing food security and nutrition crisis in northeast Nigeria. Also, Muslims in Tunisia struggle with soaring prices as they celebrate Eid. And Zimbabweans get a 12-month extension on the permits allowing them to stay in South Africa. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. In Sierra Leone, President Julius Maada Bio took the oath of office for another five-year term within hours after the official results declared him the winner over his main political rival with enough votes to avoid a runoff. Despite concerns about violence after the hotly contested campaign leading up to Saturday's vote, it is calm in the capital, Freetown, today. Reporter Eric Kawa has more on the reaction to the elections from the capital.
Of the Constitution of Sierra Leone, 1991, Act number 6 of 1991, I hereby certify that Bio Julius Maada, having polled with 1,566,932 of the valid vote cast, representing 56.17% of the total valid vote cast in the 24th June 2023 presidential election, duly elected President of the Republic.
That was the chairman of the Electoral Commission for Sierra Leone, Mohamed Kone, declaring results late Tuesday. In the results, incumbent President Julius Maada Bio was declared the winner with 56.17%, defeating his main political rival, Samora Kamara, with 41.16%. VOA was out in the streets of Freetown.
We're doing our celebration peacefully. We don't want any confusion. The president is ready to work, as he had already started. He just needs to complete them with more initiative.
I am Ibrahim Barry, an APC supporter. We lost the election. I call our supporters to bear with the situation to promote peace.
The opposition, however, criticizes the process. In a tweet, the presidential candidate of the All People's Congress Party, Samora Kamara, says the reports are not credible, and he categorically rejects the outcome. He had this to say at an earlier press conference before the announcement of the results.
ECSL, under the leadership of Mr. Mohamed Kone, has demonstrated a total lack of transparency and accountability in the critical stages of our electoral process.
International and local observers have also raised concerns about the process. The chair of the Electoral Commission, however, states that any citizen who lawfully voted may challenge the validity of the election of the president by petitioning the Supreme Court of Sierra Leone within 7 days after the declaration. For VOA Africa, I'm Eric Kawa in Freetown.
UN agencies are warning the food security and nutrition crisis in northeast Nigeria has reached alarming new heights, and swift global action is needed to head off a catastrophic outcome with donations slow to roll in. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Humanitarian Coordinator in Nigeria, Matthias Schmall, last briefed international donors a year ago on the critical situation in northeast Nigeria. Since then, he says, conditions have worsened for millions of people in Borno, Adamawa, and Yobe states. He says the number of people facing severe hunger has risen to 4.3 million, with more than 500,000 on the verge of famine. He says the number of children under five suffering from severe acute malnutrition has doubled to 700,000 this year compared to 2022.
Mind that this crisis is primarily the result of years of protracted conflict. We're in the 13th year of a non-international armed conflict. and the insecurity that comes with a conflict that continues to prevent many people from farming or earning their own income.
Schmal says conditions will be particularly difficult for people in northeast Nigeria during the peak of the lean season from June to August. He says the UN needs to raise $396 million to help 2.8 million people over the next 6 months. The World Food Program reports 4.3 million people need food assistance in northeast Nigeria. However, WFP country director in Nigeria, David Stevenson, says money is so tight, the UN will be unable to assist 1.5 million of these people, though they too are needy.
And those were hard choices of prioritization based on those that are most affected by the conflict, those that are most affected by the floods and inflation. So there's been a very significant prioritization, and already we have people coming to our offices saying, you know, they're hungry, they're extremely hungry, and people appealing on their behalf, and we're turning them away.
The $396 million six-month lean season plan is limited in scope. It is only meant to tide people over through the critical lean season when food stocks are at their lowest. The scheme accounts for only a small portion of the UN's 2023 overall $1.3 billion humanitarian response plan for northeast Nigeria. While half the year has gone by, humanitarian officials working in the region note only 25% of what they need for their life-saving operations has been funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Around the world, Muslims have been practicing for Eid al-Adha, when Muslims traditionally sacrifice a sheep to Allah. In Tunisia, the deepening economic crisis has driven up the cost of food and hurt incomes. The price of a special Eid sheep has more than doubled in recent years, meaning many families will not be buying a whole one this year. Reporter Alicia Volkman has more from Tunis.
In Balasrek, a working-class neighborhood in Tunis, Salafs have set up pens to hold sheep for Muslims to buy their sacrifice for Eid. Traditionally, Muslims sacrifice a sheep in memory of the Prophet Abraham's willingness to sacrifice one of his sons as an act of obedience to God's will. God rewarded his obedience by replacing his son with a sheep. Traditionally, on this feast day, the sheep is shared not just with the family, but also with the community, so rich or poor, all can have meat. Normally, the day and night before Eid, Tunis echoes with the sound of sheep bleating. But this year, it's much quieter. That's because, according to World Bank data, Tunisians are getting poorer, so fewer people can afford to buy a sacrificial sheep. Abdel Karim Ben Rabah owns two butcher shops in Tunis. Outside his shop are two pens holding about 20 or 30 sheep, and his assistants are slaughtering, skinning and butchering them for customers. He sells sheep incredibly expensive now. He's selling Eid sheep for 1,200 Tunisian dinars, around $390, up to 1,500 or 1,600 dinars, with special breeds that can sell for as much as 3,400 dinars. That's over $1,100. Ben Rabha says he's now selling 60 to 70% whole sheep than he did last year. Many customers just buy part of a sheep, maybe half, or even just a few kilos for Eid. Rabha says climate change is having a big impact on animal farming in Tunisia and is another reason that prices are going up. He says the Eid sheep he is selling are from Sbibe in the northwest of Tunisia, where the grass is lush and green. But Tunisia has suffered severe drought for the past 4 or 5 years, and with grasslands drying up, farmers are already having to rely more heavily on pricey imported animal feed. The World Bank says Tunisia is a net importer with a growing trade deficit and has been hit very hard by external inflation due to the shipping crisis and the Ukraine war. All of this is slamming farmers and consumers with never-ending price rises. Traditionally in Tunisia, Eid is not just about the big family barbecue. It is also a chance to preserve meat for later, such as making sausages and meatballs that are cooked and stored in oil, and a spicy version of jerky called kadid, and osben, which are parcels of sheep's stomach filled with spiced offal, which is used later in stews. But with families not buying whole sheep, these food traditions of big feasts and preserving spiced meat delicacies are also at risk of disappearing. For Voice of America Africa, I'm Alicia Faulkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
In South Africa, the Pretoria High Court today ordered a 12-month extension to the Zimbabwe exemption permits, which were to expire on Friday. The Minister of Home Affairs earlier extended the permits by 6 months, but the court nullified his decision. The ruling means nearly 200,000 Zimbabweans have more time to apply for permanent residency or arrange to leave the country. The court gave the minister 12 months to come up with a fair termination process if he wants to continue in that direction. Zimbabwe activist groups have praised the decision, but some South African civil society groups have opposed extending the permits. The Department of Home Affairs said on its website the minister will study the ruling and, quote, in due course fully respond, end quote. South Africa has experienced rising anti-foreigner sentiment as the economy has weakened and unemployment has risen above 30%. Earlier this month, a mob of South Africans rioted in a township outside Johannesburg, attacking properties owned by foreigners. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these stories and or more from the continent, slide on over to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and television programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The de facto head of the Sudanese Sovereign Council and head of the Sudanese Army, General Abdul Fattah al-Burhan, announced a 24-hour ceasefire today in honor of the Muslim holiday Eid al-Adha. He also called on the country's youth to join the fight against the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Juba.
During his Eid al-Adha address broadcasted on the state-owned TV Tuesday, General Abdul Fattah al-Burhan announced a unilateral 24-hour ceasefire to allow the Sudanese enjoy Eid al-Adha festivities. He says his forces will continue to fight against what he termed as betrayal of the nation and restore stability in the country. Al-Burhan accused the Rapid Support Forces of allegedly violating the rights of civilians in Khartoum, Darfur, and other parts of Sudan.
This outlawed group violates rights, attacks civilians in their houses, and uses them for their operations. They looted the property of civilians and destroyed the country's infrastructure and services. Up to today, they continue to kill, loot, and destroy property of the people.
The commander of the Sudan Armed Forces called on the country's youth to join the army and defend their nation against what he called internal and external conspiracies.
The ongoing conspiracy against our country demands vigilance and readiness to defend the threat against the country. Therefore, we ask all the youth of my country and all those who are capable of defending themselves not to hesitate or delay in fulfilling this national duty in their respective communities or by joining the military units.
General Burhan says the youth will be honored for safeguarding the Sudanese sovereignty. The head of the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, announced a 48-hour ceasefire effective Tuesday to allow Sudanese to celebrate Eid al-Adha. General Dagalo said his forces would remain in their positions and fight in self-defense if attacked during the truce period. He noted that his forces are committed to end the fighting and suffering of civilians.
My wish is that these days will be used for a genuine forgiveness and reconciliation among our people. We have a deep feeling of our people who are suffering and going through harsh humanitarian situations due to the ongoing fighting, which has affected their livelihoods. We are determined to end this war, hopefully strong and united once again.
The RSF commander says he is concerned about reports of human rights abuses committed by his forces against civilians. He announced the establishment of field courts headed by the Major General Essam Saleh Fidel to investigate the claims of abuses allegedly committed by the RSF. Sudanese activist Asad al-Tahir, who spoke to South Sudan in Focus from Niala town in South Darfur state, downplayed the announcement of the ceasefire by both warring parties. Al-Tahir says many Sudanese are displaced within the country or have crossed the border to the neighboring Central Africa, Chad, and South Sudan. He says few residents of Niala town who did not cross into Chad are living under harsh conditions.
Most of the civilians were depending on the monthly salary, and even those who used to depend on the daily casual work income are now sitting idle. People are unable to provide for their needs because they don't have money.
UN says 2.5 million people have been displaced within and outside Sudan since the onset of the conflict on April 15th. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
The president of the African Union, Azali Assoumani, warned that the destabilization of the region could lead all of Africa on the same path and urged the intensification of joint and active actions to reach solutions in favor of a peaceful and prosperous Congo. Assoumani spoke yesterday in Luanda at the summit of heads of state and government on efforts to find peace in eastern DR Congo. For more than two decades, the region has suffered attacks by more than 100 different rebel groups seeking control of territory or resources. He emphasized the need for regional nations to coordinate their proposals for effective political, diplomatic, and security solutions that do not overlap. The meeting has brought together heads of state and high-level representatives of regional blocs, including the Southern African Development Community, the International Conference on the Great Lakes Region, and the Economic Community of Central African States. Representatives of Burundi, Zimbabwe, Gabon, DR Congo, Rwanda, Comoros, Namibia, and the United Nations are also attending that meeting. A senior U.S. Africa Command official says it's difficult to address climate change issues in African countries in conflict. AFRICOM has organized a symposium in Botswana where military representatives from some 36 African countries are discussing the impact of climate change on security. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Mogundisi Dube has the details.
U.S. Air Force Major General Kenneth Ekman says in war-torn African countries like Sudan, climate change issues are forced to take a backseat with resources channeled to the conflict. Ekman is the Director of Strategy, Engagement and Programs for the U.S. Africa Command. He notes the extremist group Al-Shabaab also carries out attacks in Somalia and adjacent countries, worsening problems in the drought-stricken Horn of Africa region.
I'm aware of specific cases where Al-Shabaab has closed wells, right? Denied population water supplies, and they do that to increase displacement, increase chaos, and raise their own effectiveness within Somalia. So it's tragic, and that's where climate change is an accelerant for what they're doing. Somalia is an unfortunate case.
He says in stable countries like Botswana, there is time and opportunity to combat climate change. Ekman spoke to VOA on the sidelines of an AFRICOM conference on climate change with military representatives from around the continent. He says Africa is disproportionately affected by climate change, with conflict zones, particularly in the Horn of Africa and West Africa, the hardest hit. Susan Yonchi is the Regional Environment Science and Technology Officer at the U.S. Embassy in Botswana. She says the U.S. is committed to helping African countries fight challenges associated with climate change, including food and water security.
You know, the Biden-Harris administration continue to emphasize that tackling the climate crisis is a priority, not just globally, but especially here in Africa, given the vulnerabilities of Africa, African countries, to the impacts of climate change.
The delegates at the meeting, which concludes tomorrow, will come up with recommendations for governments on security threats that climate change creates. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
A United Nations Security Council vote to end a peacekeeping mission in Mali known as MUNISMA was postponed to later this week due to ongoing talks. The French news agency AFP says the vote, which was scheduled for yesterday, was postponed to tomorrow, the last day of the mandate for MUNISMA forces. This due to ongoing discussions between members of the council and Mali. Germany's defense minister said today that Berlin is looking to pull its 1,000 troops out of Mali faster in light of the planned withdrawal of U.S. UN peacekeepers after June 30th. On June 16th, Mali's foreign minister asked the 13,000-strong force to leave without delay. The United States, which said it regretted the Malian decision, called for an orderly and responsible withdrawal. Reuters News reported yesterday that a draft Security Council resolution proposed by France would end the UN's peacekeeping to Mali on June 30th and withdraw its peacekeeping mission within 6 months from that date. Mali would like the complete withdrawal to be done sooner. Tanzania's government is encouraging drivers to switch from putting gasoline in their tanks to compressed natural gas. This initiative aims to lower carbon emissions that cause global warming. As Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam, some drivers are also hoping the switch will save them money in the long run.
Jackson Peter, an Uber driver based in Dar es Salaam, recently switched from using gasoline to compressed natural gas, CNG, in his car. He says he did it for the environment and his wallet. I noticed that fuel prices were rising, and I didn't know until when the prices would continue to rise. Also, using gas is less expensive and better for the environment compared to petrol and diesel. It costs at least $1,000 to convert a car to compressed natural gas in Tanzania. It's a price many car users find more affordable, even though the government does not subsidize the charge. The Tanzanian government aims to power 8,000 cars with natural gas in Dar es Salaam alone. Officials say so far, more than 2,000 vehicles have made the switch since the initiative began in 2018. At the conversion center located at the Dar es Salaam Institute of Technology, there's a steady stream of customers. Workshop manager Gerutu Bosige explains. He says with the increase in awareness and education about natural gas usage in Tanzania, the number of customers has grown rapidly from one to thousands. He projects there will be over 6,000 customers by 2025, reflecting the positive response as more Tanzanians embrace the benefits of using natural gas in vehicles. The Tanzanian government has embraced the 2015 Paris Agreement to limit global warming, mitigate the impacts of climate change, and build an environmentally sustainable future. Jamal Baruti sits on Tanzania's National Environment Council. Between now and 2030, he says, the aim of Tanzania is to make sure the amount of hazardous gases emission is reduced by up to 30 to 35% compared to the assessment that was conducted previously. He says, we know these gases come from various areas, including the burning of forests, charcoal and cars. So with this trend of using natural gas in our country, we believe we'll reduce the emission of these gases to that extent. Besides encouraging cars to switch to CNG, the government has banned the use of firewood and charcoal by private and government institutions beginning in 2025. The government is also shifting investments to alternative energy sources, including solar energy, geothermal power, wind energy, and hydropower. Meanwhile, Jackson is confident his switch to CNG will pay off, anticipating significant profits while prioritizing environmental conservation. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, be sure to visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and engineer Nelson Roberts, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.